It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
We have so many more food choices today beyond just restaurants and supermarkets. Fresh fruits, vegetables, and eggs are available from rooftops and backyards and empty city lots and local farmers markets and food trucks and more. But what about animal production? Can we get involved in raising sheep in a small rural or urban settings for meat, fiber, or extra income? And should some of us have our own sheep for a large yard or a small pasture or some other opportunity, or maybe have the time to work on a flock of sheep? Well, we're going to explore that idea today with someone who knows and who has a flock of sheep himself. Paul Rogers, the Deputy Director of the American Sheep Industry Association, and a person who has for years supplemented his own income with a flock of sheep at his place in Virginia. Paul, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you, Roger. It's a pleasure. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, I'm going to ask you, Paul, right off the bat, you've got a day job and you've been working in the sheep industry. How come you raise sheep? You've got sheep in addition to a day job. And I think we've got some people listening that maybe have that dream that in addition to whatever else they're doing, they might like to add a flock of sheep. Why do you have sheep?
Well, I started them because they're the easiest livestock to raise. Now, they don't have that reputation, but in my opinion, they are. I can do this easily with an hour or two in a day, if that. And then, you know, we work on it on Saturdays, but they're easy. These animals are small enough that you can handle them with minimal handling facilities. You're probably not going to get hurt unless you really do something bad, like stand in the alleyway when one's coming at you. So you can handle them by hand. A mature ewe is going to weigh somewhere between 150 and 175 pounds. And if you want to, you can tip one up. You can, and that means turn it over and set it on its rear end and look at it. If you need to help deliver a lamb, you can do that. One person can do it, so they're easy. I think they're delightful animals. I know I'm biased because I've worked with these since I was a kid, but compared to other animals, cattle are very big. We have cattle on our farm also, but you have to have special handling equipment, and you got to be careful. Chickens are, we have those too. Predators eat those pretty easily, so you have to be careful about confinement. So we find it easy. They're easy to winter. They don't cost very much to raise, and I've never lost money on sheep. Never.
Well, you know, now that's really interesting. And you remind me of a conversation we just had, another podcast, with somebody that's in the egg business, and they raise hens, and he started off saying he just loves hens, and he had a pet that was a hen. I'd never heard that before, but he thinks hens are fun. And when you look at animals, I mean, I'm really glad you started off with the idea like they're easy. I mean, it does make some sense if somebody's not used to working with animals, and they've got an area where they can grow them. They may not want a 1,000-pound cow or two, and those sheep are a different size. And in fact, they're different breeds too, aren't they? That, I mean, some of them are even smaller among the breeds. You can get some fairly petite sheep if you choose to when you start looking at breeds.
You surely can. Yeah, there's some breeds that mature body weight won't be over, 110 or or 20 pounds or something like that, and you can get some larger ones. Yeah, I was just talking with a lady in Hawaii yesterday that wants to import a particular type of sheep from Europe, and she's really working at it. She's dedicated to it. One way or another, she's going to import either the live sheep or import embryos and have a recipient use. But she's going to have 10 or 12 or something like that. It's a specialized breed. She's interested in the fiber, the wool, more than she is the lamb itself, but you got both. So they're dual or could be triple purpose. There are around the world, and particularly in France, There's a lot of sheep milked, and cheese, sheep cheese is extremely valuable. So there's a few people doing that. But this lady, that's what she wanted to do, and she's committed to it, and it's going to be a small fenced operation, and it's going to be kind of her sideline hobby, but they'll make money. They'll do that too.
Well, you know, I would think that 10 or 12 might be a size that could apply across the country. I didn't think you were going to mention Hawaii as the first state that we have as an example. I didn't even think about sheep in Hawaii. Yeah. But I suppose there's sheep everywhere in the United States. If you were going to have 10 or 12 ewes, which the mother sheep called a ewe, if you're going to have 10 or 12, how much space do you have to have? How much pasture or barn or shelter? I mean, what's the minimum to be able to keep in a dozen or so sheep?
Well, you know, Roger, it really depends on your ecosystem, where you are. But if you were in Hawaii on the Big Island where she is, or if you were in where I live where it rains about 35 inches a year of moisture, you'd need about an acre and a half. And you really don't need any shelter. You can... Shelter's nice, more for the shepherd than for the sheep. They're really open country animals. It would be better if one were to invest in facilities, to invest in a small handling facility where you can bring them in and get them corralled and be able to work with them than the shelter itself. But if you're in arid country, it takes more than that. You need more acreage, or you could irrigate it. So they're extremely versatile animals, and I believe very easy to handle.
Well, when you talk about an acre and a half or so, I mean, there's a lot of places in the country that are able to be out on the edge of town and have yards that big. And some, now I live in California, and that's not happening much in California. But there's a lot of places that do have access to a little bit of acreage.
Right.
Now, with someone like that, would they tend to be kind of living on it, that it's somewhere that they've got either a large yard or a pasture right attached to it, or can they have access to a small pasture and a barn somewhere, you know, in the neighborhood?
Let me answer your question this way. Where I used to live before I moved here, I had a quarter-acre lot, and I leased a six-acre pasture behind my lot. I used a bathtub for a watering tank and filled it up with a water hose from the house, and I had 30 ewes on that pasture all the time.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very durable.
Well, let me kind of ask you a personal question and then about your 30 ewes, because time's passed. It's been a few years since you've done that, and we're going to get to your current operation someday, which is quite a bit bigger. But back when you had 30 ewes, I mean, what might you make in a good year off of 30 ewes as a supplemental income?
Today, with 30 ewes, and they'll mostly have twins, depending on the breed, but let's just say they had, on an average, one and a half. You know, you're going to have 45 lambs or so, or 55 or something like that, from those ewes, and they're each going to be worth somewhere around $100 a head, maybe $150.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on when you sell them. We find that the inputs are so minimal that, depending on how you handle them, you can put a lot of money into them, or you can put a little bit. I tend to think that less is better, you know, until you need interventions, or when you get a dry year and you need more supplemental feed and things like that. So, yeah.
So if they got like 30 head, they can might bring in $5,000 or $6,000?
Oh, yeah. Every year. Yeah.
Well, and more families are looking for some extra income, too. In addition to, I think, that there are a lot of people that are just looking to do more outdoors, and it appeals to them to be, they'd like to be a farmer, but get into it a little bit. Maybe if there's two people in the family that are currently working, they'd like to have somebody stay home if they could. You know, it just kind of fits. You know, I hear more and more people describing that ideal. They'd like to be a little bit more rural, a little bit more hands-on, a little bit more outdoors, and a little bit more money for many people that sheep might fit in. Now,
I think so, and there are a world of people that started out with sheep as 4-H projects as children, because they're great for kids. As I said, they're not really dangerous. You can tame them if you want to. You can handle them, and they're people friendly. And so, yeah, I think so. And I'm, you know, as I said before, we're diversified on our place a little bit. But if I'm getting a little older now, so we're looking at more sheep and fewer cattle, just because of the amount of effort and work it takes, the danger factor, the facility upkeep, and the feeding. These sheep are they're built to go out and graze all kinds of things. They'll eat things that other animals won't eat and do well on it.
Or they eat poison oak.
Yeah, they will.
Do they? We could use some out here, because everywhere you walk there's poison oak. And I've wondered why they don't graze more sheep and to clean it up a little bit more, too. If you had some sheep, do you need to have a barn, do you think?
I don't have one. We've got sheep on three different properties, and there's not a shed on the place.
But, really?
Right. We have trees. We've got brush cover. Those animals will get out of the wind during lambing time. They'll find a spot that's good for them with cover. If it's very cold, they'll find the right place. And so, no, we don't have any buildings whatsoever.
Even snow? I mean, you do get snow there.
Oh, yeah, we get a lot of snow sometimes. We've had them, there's been two or three times that these sheep have bedded on a high bluff on the east side, southeast side, which is a warm side, and 2.5 feet of snow, and didn't come down for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so I get worried about them and start making a trail, and there's water down there. I've got heated water a ways down the hill. And they really didn't want to come. They were eating snow, and they'll use their hooves to grub around and pick around. And, you know, if they can move that snow back a little bit and get into the forage, they'll do that, and not a single problem.
Well, if there is a single animal that's dressed for the weather, it's got to be sheep.
Yeah, they are. There's books written about the thermal properties of wool, and they protect them when it's hot, and they protect them when it's cold. And those animals, we don't let them go without water. I mean, we try really hard to make sure they've got water. Snow's water, snow works. But they do just fine. They really do. No problems that are detectable.
Now, through the winter, then, you supplement with some grain or hay in addition to what they're foraging in the pasture?
Well, we've got one pasture that's... as an example, and it varies from one ecosystem to the other, but on ours, I think there's 150 ewes on that pasture, and normally we put hay out there and it's available to them. But if they ate 10 or 12 big rolls, which weigh about 600 pounds a piece all winter, that'd be a lot. And today you can go down there, and the last three big rolls we put out haven't been eaten. So we do offer it to them. We don't supplement with grain except right before breeding and right before lambing, we'll give them some. Or if it's during the last 6 weeks before lambing or month before lambing, we'll supplement with some grain just to make sure that, you know, the ewes are preparing for the lambs and that when they start lactating, they'll have enough milk.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So if you so you've got the sheep, so you go out and you buy some ewes. We don't need to go into too many details, but people could figure out we're going to have a ram, a buck, male sheep, to breed those ewes to have a lamb. And what is it 5 months?
Yeah.
So you breed the ewes, you get the lambs in 5 months. And when those lambs are born, is there anything to do to them until they just feed on mother's milk, and do they start grazing pretty fast?
They start grazing very quickly. It depends on the breed a little bit, but within 30 days, they'll all be grazing. You know, just pretty well taking care of themselves. Some breed types will graze a little bit quicker, but 30 days... they're all out there munching and It's kind of a pretty sight.
When do they reach a weight that they're market weight?
Well, that's a harder question to ask than it used to, or answer than it used to be. We used to say 100 pounds, 100 pound lamb, or 110, 20 pound lamb is the right weight. Now there's quite a demand from, we've got a lot of immigrants in this country that are used to different size weights, sizes of cuts, and weights of lamb. So, give an example on my operation and others in this whole region. Lambs will be born at the end of April. They'll be marketed in August, early August, and they go right to processing. And they're weighing about 70 pounds. If you wanted to extend that, you can put them in a different pasture with more, you know, lush pasture, or put them on grain and put another 30 pounds on them. And you probably will be seeking a different market. It just kind of depends on how it works for you. So they're very versatile in that way. There are lambs that are born in April, May that won't be processed for about a year. And it depends on how you feed them. If you can grow them a long time and then feed them really well for the last, say, 2 months or even a month, then you'll end up with a lamb that's 140, 50 pounds.
If you raise these lambs, where can you find them processed?
It's really interesting. There's only a handful, I mean literally a handful, of large processing plants. There are probably seven. And there's two big ones. One of them has two plants, and then you've got the second tier of another four plants that are processing lambs every week. It's exclusively lambs. But there's something like 650 small lamb processors around the United States. And they may be multi-species plants. They may process lambs, goats, a few calves, veal calves, and they're scattered all about, but in the Northeast and the Great Lakes area and on the West Coast, and now Texas and New Mexico. So they're around. They get congregated at a couple of large livestock markets. New Holland, Pennsylvania is one, then San Angelo, Texas, Colorado, Centennial Market. There's several of them. It's amazing how many go through there. Some of them are, like I said, they might be 50 pounds, 70 pounds, 80 pounds. And then there's some larger ones, too. And they're taken. And there are some markets in downtown New York City that may process four a day.
Really? And people, are now people, anybody raising any sheep in New York City?
Not that I'm aware of, but I was at a place just outside New York City, not very far, a couple of years ago that had 2,000 sheep in confinement. It worked for them.
I'll be darned.
So they're...
Now, I would imagine some of these, if you're getting your lambs processed like that, you're getting the meat from the lamb, you can take some for yourself, and then you can sell them, as carcasses and frozen cuts and... Maybe
sure.
Farmers markets and, you know, just
sure.
All of those kind of channels, I suppose.
A lot of farmers market business with lambs. I've got an acquaintance in Arkansas that they go every week to a farmers market, and it's not there, just there. It's everywhere. It's kind of a boutique meat. It's kind of a trendy meat. Mm-hmm. You'll see it in some of the food magazines, and that's more the upscale, but... folks that discover it, and aside from the immigrant and ethnic consumers, other people discover that stuff and say, hey, it's different. We like it. It brings a pretty good price.
Paul, there's another product, and that is wool. So what happens, I mean, if you're a small farm flock, I'm guessing it's perhaps not easy to find people that know how to shear sheep and market the wool. Is that a challenge?
It can be in particularly in areas where there aren't as many sheep. And our organization has sponsored shearing schools for years and years, starting them when they're in high school. It's really not that hard. There's techniques to it, as you know. If you're in the western states and the more arid intermountain states, they're shearing crews that move around with a trailer, and they're shearing a longer, finer fiber. that's usually worth pretty good money, so they take real good care of it. If you're in the Midwest or somewhere else, then, yeah, it's a little more of a challenge to find someone to do it, but they're around. The folks are around, and that mm-hmm. will shear them. Then there are sheep that don't grow any wool. They grow hair, and they shed it. It kind of depends on what you want to do. If wool will make money for you, or if there's a lot of hand spinners, it's amazing. People that are raising colored sheep, black ones or other colors, there's red ones, they're making a particular type of yarn from that. They'll hand wash it, hand spin it, and may even make garments out of it. So it just kind of depends on what you want to do.
You know, Paul, one thing I'm finding fascinating is these podcasts about minimalist, and there's somebody called Mr. Money Mustache in Colorado, and these are people that have made money in Silicon Valley and other areas, and they've decided they want to simplify their life and move to more rural areas, and many of them are claiming how they're living in small houses and simplifying their life, you know, minimalizing every way that they can, and they have to put together several different sources of income because they maybe don't want to have the job that required the hour and a half commute that they used to have, but they have to put a few things together to make a living. And if one of those things were sheep, if they wanted to make an extra, say, $20,000 a year, what might be the right number of sheep you might need to have to produce, you know, around $20,000 of more income into the family?
Oh, it'd be somewhere around probably 150,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
And if you had that number of sheep, about how many acres would you have to have access to?
Well, it's really hard. It depends on the amount of rainfall and what kind of point
mm-hmm,
you have.
Sure.
Well, again, I'll use my own example. We have one pasture that has it's 45 acres, and it has 50 ewes, 60 goats, and 7 head of cattle on there. And there's enough feed left in the fall to feed them all winter. We don't have to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
And another pasture has 120, I forget my numbers on my animals because they change from time to time. There's lambs on there, and I'm talking about ewes. So 150 on another boundary that's probably got 60 open acres and the rest woods.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in an arid area and not irrigated, it would probably take 3 or 4 times that amount of acreage to do that. But what you were talking about, you know, and I know some people that do this, is they've got a small acreage, and they want to be minimalist, and you just fence the whole thing, and sheep will graze right up against the house. You don't have to worry about them knocking stuff down. They mow the grass for you.
Mm-hmm.
So they're taking care of the yard. They're taking care of the property. They eat the weeds. They eat the brush. And what I advise people to do is to start out with what is to you a manageable number, and that might be a small number, and just grow from there.
Like, what do you mean, like 10 or 12 or?
Yeah.
5 or 6?
Well,
or?
A ram unit usually is about 25,
uh-huh.
30, 35.
Mm-hmm.
But you might not want to start that big, you know,
mm-hmm.
get 10 or 12 and,
mm-hmm.
and just start out, see how you like it. Breed choice is kind of important. You know, do you really want to do hand spinning, or would you rather not have any wool?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to milk them, there's some breeds that milk more than others. You know, there's not too many people going to do that because that, you know, that's a special operation of itself and
mm-hmm.
requires some storage and some other equipment. But if you did, then you'd want to consider that. But yeah, a dozen or so, or and just get started and see how you like it and see how it works.
There are some animals other animals that like to eat sheep. How do they keep from getting the dogs and coyotes out here? We even have mountain lions. How does somebody that wants to make sure that they're protecting their sheep adequately by dogs or coyotes?
Yeah, I wondered when we'd get to this, because that is a major, major problem. You know, a sheep is defenseless. It's at the bottom end of the food chain, just like a rabbit is. Everything wants to eat it. If you're a smallholder, a good fence will pretty well take care of things. And there's ways to augment a good fence to take care of it. If you're in a range situation, especially if you're in a range or open situation, a combination of mitigation methods. Guardian dogs are used almost everywhere now. They're great big, the original, I guess, U.S. used breed is Great Pyrenees, but there's a bunch of others. But their big dogs are 130 to 170 pound dogs that are bonded to the sheep, and they take care of the sheep, and they keep other predators away, mainly as a deterrent. But if they need to fight, they'll fight. Mm-hmm. And that's almost everybody almost has to have those if they're in a more extensive type environment. I have to use them because our pastures are large enough, and the country's broken up enough and woody and all that.
So what kind of dog do you have?
Oh, we've got Great Pyrenees, and then we've got crosses with Maremma, Tatra, and Anatolian Shepherd. So we've kind of got a mixture. There's seven of those things down there.
I know the Great Pyrenees. I wouldn't know the others right offhand. But
yeah,
So if you had like 25, 30, or 40, and you're kind of moving up and you got some sheep, would those folks possibly put a dog in with the flock and just have a dog living with them, the sheep?
Oh, I would. I would. If I, when I'm old and infirm someday, I'm going to have a few sheep around just to have the dog. It's the most fascinating creature. they really are. Can you imagine a 150-pound dog that thinks it's a sheep and lives with the sheep and doesn't hurt them, doesn't touch them? You know, they actually try to mother the lambs. They're just fascinating creatures. So, yeah, I'd, if I had 25, 35, 40, 50 sheep, I'd put a dog with them. Absolutely.
Well, you know what, Paul? I'm pretty sure there's somebody listening to this podcast that had been thinking about this, and if they weren't, they're starting to think about it now. And if they want to go the next step and learn more about how they might get into sheep, where do you suggest they go next to do more research on the possibility?
Well, a couple of places. I would always contact my county extension office and my state extension specialist with livestock. Our organization, the American Sheep Industry Association, markets a sheep production handbook that I'd recommend any sheep producer should have one. It's used as the primary textbook for sheep production courses across the country. And you can get that from our website, www.sheepusa.org. There's a sampling of it on there on the website, so you can take a look at it. There's a DVD drive comes with it, searchable and everything. So that's where I would start. You know, we're always available. If somebody needs some help or something like that, why, they can give us a call.
Well, I tell you what, I think it's exciting, and I think you're going to find more and more people follow your lead, and I'm sure we'll be following up on the contacts that you've offered, and really appreciate your taking the time to be on Farm to Table Talk.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Roger. It's always good visiting with you, and look forward to the next time.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.